Thank you for joining us today. My name is Kathleen Wilson. I'm a Worldwide Center of Excellence Architect at Microsoft. I focus on Azure, DevOps, and Modern Service Management. I also have the great honor to being the Worldwide Community Lead internally to Microsoft for Modern Service Management. Joining me today is my colleague and very good friend, John Clark.
Hello, everyone. I'm John Clark. I'm a IT Service Management Architect in the Americas IT Service Management Practice within Microsoft Services. I'm also a subject matter expert in the Worldwide Community for Modern Service Management.
Great. So today we're here to talk to you a little bit about some of the work we've been doing internally at Microsoft on Modern Service Management. But before we move on, there's some other people that couldn't join us today who I would like to acknowledge that helped build out this work. And I'm just going to read out on their names so I get them all right. So special thanks and thank you to the contributions of Chris Bolash, Sandra Broke, Thomas Ellerman, Paul Finn Vendrat, Edwin Griffin, Tim Hugerworth, Alex Lee, Samantha Marsh, Carol Moon, Niels Niederweid, and Ryan Schmeier.
What is Modern Service Management? In 2016, Microsoft Services, IT, a number of different organizations came up with a definition as part of our worldwide community that defined what modern service management was. It's not a new product. It's not something that Microsoft was going to license or sell. It was simply a lens to look through that allowed professionals, our ITSM professionals, to evolve their positions with respect to IT service management. ITSM had largely not changed since 2011 when the last update to ITIL, and a lot of things have happened, especially with Microsoft since 2011. Cloud, Azure, Office 365, Dynamics Online, changes to Windows infrastructure have all occurred, and we needed to modernize our approach. Also, some of the demands that are imposed by business haven't changed just because of the cloud. Businesses are looking for much greater innovation, reduced cost, increased agility to respond to market demands, repeatability, predictability, and availability. This is what business demands, and IT is chartered to provide that and can't sit back on the laurels of we're a monopoly service provider. There are now other service providers within the market.
And to add to that too, though, John, is like, you know, most of these things haven't changed in the past, but one of the challenges that, you know, we had as IT service management professionals was still to remain relevant, right? To be able to have IT service management conversations with our customer. What does it mean around service management when we go to Windows 10? Or what is service management, how does it change from moving from private cloud to hybrid cloud? So, you know, some of these things were discussions we were having internally as a group, with some of us being thought leaders, looking at this is like traditional MOF and traditional ITSM, because you said it hasn't changed since 2011, it was not sticky enough for our cloud conversations when we started discussing Azure.
One of the questions we get a lot in talking to customers, and it's normally from their leadership, is Microsoft, we have IT service management. We've applied what the books say. We've implemented tools, and we need to do better. We're failing. We can't demonstrate value. And so we had to take that request from our customers, as well as everything that Kathleen just mentioned, and we came up with a number of before and after, and this is just a subset of that. And it really starts with people. Everything should start with people. You know, whether you're looking at the Agile Manifesto or DevOps itself, and really modern service management is just an encapsulation or a wrapper around Agile. It all starts with people, collaboration, and relationships, not technology and process. So we started with the concept of DNA. All right, DNA from intermediation to disintermediation, and what that means basically is IT needs to become more of a service broker and not just be the exclusive provider, because services are now going to be provided by multiple cloud vendors, other providers, and things like that. So that competition, that ability and optionality that provides is going to provide business greater benefit from IT when they have those different options. Service delivery is more continuous versus wave-based. In the past, things were deployed in much longer release cycles, but often with errors and problems, and normally it was a big smoking crater, versus in a continuous iteration-based release approach, it is, one, you catch defects and errors sooner, and if there is, it's much easier to recover and much quicker to recover, so the impact is much lower. Service stability, and quite often people read design for failure. Things are going to fail. And if you look at how at Microsoft with Azure, Amazon, Google, any of these companies, they've built their cloud infrastructure assuming failure, that parts are going to break, that components are going to break, that software is going to have bugs. If you build your infrastructure as well as your applications that assume this failure is going to take place, then when it occurs, you're ready to handle it. Delegation levels. This is one of those carryovers from ITIL and IT service management that is still true today. Understanding services end-to-end, not within the IT silos, but also making decisions organizationally around services versus within those technical silos. Kathleen?
Yeah, and if we're going to go in a little bit more about like processes back in the day in early IT service management, we would begin with a project. It's let's design our processes from the ground up. We document them in Visio, and eventually, you know, a lot of organizations, they didn't really get around to tooling them quite appropriately, right? It's kind of like, well, the process is this on the paper, but it's not necessarily that in our products and tools. So what we really look at is with processes, and the thing is that we enable process through self-service, knowledge. Processes are to reduce friction and increase the flow of value much more quickly. And processes have to be fully automated. When we start looking at automation, a lot of organizations, you know, we talked, they have pockets of automation. Well, we do automation here, but it takes a manual effort to actually trigger the automation in traditional IT. When we start looking at modern IT, is really we're looking at automation is systemic, it's triggered, and it's automatic, right? And if automation fails, the backdrop is backdrop by manual effort, not manual effort pushing out automation. Monitoring, again, we've always been talking about end-to-end service monitoring, even in traditional ITSM, but we still went on element and fault space. Really, when we start looking at situations where people, like, especially in hybrid cloud, you know, some of the stuff is not even residing in your own data center, and you have to have an end-to-end view of it. And the other thing that we've been working at as a practice with trying to help our customers is understand capability monitoring, right? So if we were to monitor a banking machine or an ATM, we would want to make sure that we are monitoring that, you know, well, first of all, you want to make sure it's up and it's not spitting cash out all over the place or it's retrieving cash. But if I was to dip my card in, I would want to be able to withdraw cash. I would want to do deposit cash, maybe have a balance update, and update my passbook. And so the monitoring should be focused on the capability of what that ATM gives me, not whether or not it's up or down, right? That's a very IT-centric focused of whether or not the ATM is up or not. Support, traditional service desk, you know, 1-800, call for help. You know, people would all call the service desk, or there's a contact center. Now, if you think about support now, it talks about customer care and it's self-service. Our business users are far much more savvy now than they were 5-10 years ago. And I don't know how many people would want to call the service desk up and wait on hold to get it. So we need a portal where they can go to and reset their passwords themselves, or they could look up the availability of their service. The expert bar, that scenario where people go into expert bar and, you know, the experts help you resolve your problem. So they work with you in a coaching manner as opposed to doing it for you. Lifecycle, again, as we know, many of our customers struggle with this, and many organizations are N-1, and maybe N-10 or older, right? It's very hard to maintain on the current on the platform. When we start looking at modern IT, is that we're N and N+1. Configuration and asset management, you know, a big thing, ITIL says that you need to have it, but it's discovered it's a lot of manual configuration. And it was very interesting. the story when we were talking to a customer, I think it was last week, John, and we were talking to the ITSM people, and they're like, well, I'm the configuration manager, and I'm the asset manager, and I want to import all the CIs from Azure. And when we were talking about that, I mentioned to John, it's kind of like, well, it's electric now, right? Because your infrastructure becomes utility, or as you like say, it's cattle, not pets. So the idea is that back in the original days, you used to have to generate your own electricity. Now you're buying electricity from Microsoft, and your monitoring point is the switch, right? Where your electric switch goes on. So you don't need to monitor all the transformers, or you don't have to monitor the actual power generating stations. You just have to monitor whether or not the electricity is on or off.
So you've got a couple examples of what this looks like from a service brokerage view. You care to share?
Yeah. So you know, back in the days, it's really when we start looking at cloud or any new modern service management, it's really about the people, right? And we need to help people understand that there is a job for you in cloud. So looking at the left hand side is we have your traditional IT enterprise, where IT department is like the man in the middle, right? It's intermediation. So the business will go to them, they create, they build, they operate, they retire throughout the whole life cycle. But in the modern enterprise, IT acts as a service broker, right? So the idea is that you would broker services. Is like infrastructure, I don't build and manage infrastructure anymore, John. We rent infrastructure. We use infrastructure as a service in Azure, and we put our compute in the cloud. Or can you help me with a good Office 365 example? Because that's a really good one to go through. Is this like you no longer have to maintain
Exchange, SharePoint, Skype for Business.
Yeah.
You're renting that now from Microsoft.
Right. So the idea is like things like software as a service, or platform as a service, or infrastructure as a service, is that some of the core capabilities, it's like those roles will no longer exist in your organization that manage the fabric and manage the hardware. As an employee, you'll be managing higher up the stack, right? So I'm not gonna be obsessed with monitoring the hardware anymore, right? I would wanna be monitoring end-to-end capability of the product.
So one of the questions we get a lot is, okay, I'm an ITSM professional. Can you give me an example of what modern looks like? And you've got a really good example here today, right?
Yeah, well, it's resonated a lot with some of my colleagues who are heavy infrastructure folks, but it's just like, you know, when we apply modern service management to something like change management, or my favorite one is change control, right? A lot of intermediation goes on in change control. I liken it to we're moving from having stoplights to roundabouts. And you realize that it's when, I'm from Canada, John's from the US, so roundabouts are not, you know, they're not very common. So it's a bit uncomfortable when you ran into your first roundabout, isn't it?
You have to figure it out.
Yeah, you have to figure out. But we look at it, there's some rules about going through a roundabout, and the idea is there's a bit of pain. So as you go and learn the rules of the roundabout, is that there's rules, there's freedom, we've delegated responsibility, but you made the comment, what's the difference between stoplights and roundabouts?
So if you think about it, an intersection is basically going to consist of stops and starts regardless of traffic, regardless of flow. Where the idea behind a roundabout is very simple, continuous flow. I don't have to stop, I may have to slow down, but I can put a lot more vehicles through a roundabout, and I'm actually seeing, especially in places, I'm from Ohio, and I'm seeing more and more roundabouts in our area, and I think what's happened is people realize that, it's safer if there's a collision. It's normally cars are going in the almost same direction. They may get sideswiped, where intersection is probably more dangerous if somebody doesn't follow the rules. In both cases, you have to follow the rules. But secondly, that continuous flow allows more vehicles in the case of a roundabout. When you have that continuous flow with software deployment and release, it's you're able to release more software, more capabilities, more functionality quicker. You're still following a set of rules, and there's still a set of control barriers that have to follow as far as that from that model. So great example. I hope that's helpful for folks out there trying to get an idea. We have a number of these scenarios. The scenarios here for most of the ITSM processes where there's a before and after on how the enterprise looks today based on more traditional IT service management perspective, and then how that looks modern. So one of the questions that, as mentioned before, we get a lot is around, so what is modern service management and how does it relate to things like Agile, traditional IT service management, and DevOps? And the answer is simple. As I said before, modern service management is a lens to look through. It's not a set of its own books. It's not a framework. We're not going to be testing anybody on it. It's just a perspective, and think of it that way. And I think one of the easiest ways to look at it, and I've kind of used the term encapsulation, but I'll say wrapper, of you start with something along the lines of Agile. And there is this set of principles. It's called the Agile Manifesto. There's a number of principles out here, and I'm not going to go into these in detail. You can go out and use Bing or that other search engine and find plenty of information on Agile and the principles and the positions that it takes. Most importantly is, you know, continuous flow, focusing on the customer. You know, working software is the key measure of success from an Agile perspective. And I think this is where a lot of organizations often get it wrong. They see Agile as, we're going to release lots of code very quickly. We're not going to inform operations. We're not going to do adequate testing and put those types of controls into place. And that's why Agile projects fail and Agile organizations fail, is because they're not doing everything that Agile is prescribing. Secondly, that is one of the reasons that DevOps evolved, was this concept of we need to let the folks in operations know that we're moving to this continuous Agile approach to software release management and how often these updates are going to be done. It's not going to be done in very long-term releases that are very large. It's going to be in a continuous model. Microsoft came up with the seven habits of DevOps, which cover things such as flow of customer value, backlog improved by learning, evidence gathered in production. You hear things like testing in production, which we used to joke about. We used to have memes with the most interesting man in the world. but now the focus is on you can test in production. You can, because of the capabilities that cloud provides and that private cloud, public cloud both provide, you can do things differently. And that's what people need to understand. These habits that are outlined here, and again, these are all publicly available. If you go to search Bing, the DevOps, Microsoft 7 Habits, you'll find a lot of details around these different aspects of DevOps. And so how does this relate to modern service management? Well, modern service management is simply the wrapper around this that addresses all of those things, because if you look at Agile and you look at DevOps, it's very focused on software development and programming. The problem with that, there's a lot more to IT than just that. There's also lots of organizations that don't develop software, they buy it. They purchase it from a software publisher or a company. Mm-hmm. All of this is still very applicable, even if you're not in a coding or development type environment. And the idea is, I need to put a wrapper around Agile and DevOps that allows me to address those scenarios. So, as we've stated before, another common question we get from customers is, how does Microsoft do it? What does Microsoft do internally? And one of the things that we had come up with was this model, and it was a very simple model of, how do I measure how my capabilities from a modern perspective? There's a mandate in Microsoft to use cloud, whether that's our own private or mostly public in Azure. And so our departments, our organizations, had to change how they deploy software and how applications and services move to the cloud. So this model was created, and we're kind of just incorporating that into modern service management. So as I said before, The idea is modern service management isn't something that hasn't been done before. We're just starting to bring and tie different aspects and different good practices together.
And it's the core belief of all the teams working together. It's not an operations or IT infrastructure view. It's not a developer view. It's not a business view. It's like, you know, we're focusing on delighting the business and focusing on the business outcomes, right? And breaking down those silos. Mm-hmm. Because there's been a huge wall between developers and operations for a very long time, right?
Yep.
And adopting agile principles, adopting DevOps are not going to make it go away. But what we found is by doing the modern service management is that we could narrate that story, that fabric, or as you said, that wrapper. It's like, how are we going to behave and act and do? And focusing more so on the people and what the outcomes of the people's, the roles and the responsibilities, like how does my job change? You know, if I'm using platform as a service, right, and I'm from infrastructure, or I used to be a DBA, you know, for SQL, well, I'm not going to be deploying that, but I still may have some operational work that I have to do within it. So I think it's really a lot of things is, I liken it to is, you probably had organizational changes within your own organization. We have too. So they, what happens after you have an org change? They send out an org chart. What's the first thing you look for? Mm-hmm. Where am I in the box? And then the next thing is does John still have a job? Right? So it's like, my friend have a job. Do all these other people have a job? So really what, you know, found is there's nothing wrong with service management and all these other frameworks, but what they really lacked was focusing on the human aspect, right? And that's where I believe modern service management has been a better approach for us at Microsoft, because we focus on the people.
And I think one last point is what's very important is going forward. I've kind of made it a mandate when talking to customers about modern service management. It will sometimes be just the operations team, or just the application team, or just the infrastructure team, and I think that's a path to failure, because it all starts with bringing those groups together, helping them to understand what are the services end-to-end that they deliver, and how do they contribute to that, regardless of how their organization is either, as you said, infrastructure stovepiped, lifecycle stovepiped. Ideally, if I were to go back into a management position, I would probably organize around services, quite honestly.
Well, and that's part of the stuff was, like, you know, we've heard about bimodal mode one, right, and bimodal mode two. And a lot of work that we would do with the customers is they move, and we've got some really good stuff coming up a little later. I'm pretty excited about what we're going to show later, but it's really about building that organizational capability around that service or product or workload that you're going to move to the cloud, because that helps you, you know, define the boundary of what you're going to do. John and I were talking to a customer, I think, a couple of years ago, and they kept talking about the app name, right? And we were doing a service map, right? We were trying to define, okay, what are all the components? We were going to move it over to Azure, and they had, I think, was it 5 SQL VMs,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and we were trying to do kind of cost justification. Is it cheaper to host them as 5 SQL VMs, or would that be a good Azure SQL play to do platform as a service? And I'm like, so what did you ask them?
I asked them a really simple question. What does this application do?
And what was the answer?
Nobody knew what the application did.
So we realized that we didn't have the right people. We were having a cloud migration conversation with the infrastructure folks, and not including the developers and the business owners. So really, you know, the ideal is, like, it's starting with the people, because everybody would have a different view. And as I said, you know, hosting 5 SQL VMs, which are maybe only used periodically, one could be used for reporting, one could be used for search archive, it would probably be cheaper to host as PaaS in Azure versus SQL. So these are some of the situations that you come through and you're kind of looking at it. It's like, maybe I should look at it from a different perspective, right? And then building up organizations to support services. And you know what? IT service management and ITIL told you to do that. But what really happens now is when you move to the cloud, you have to do that,
yeah.
right? You have to do that.
So you always hate to have to address failures that are taking place in the industry. We've all heard of IT service management programs that have not delivered or failed or were canceled. We've also heard of Agile and DevOps programs and projects that have failed. And it's interesting to, if you look into why these organizations failed to achieve their outcomes. It's a pretty interesting study. Kathleen, what have you seen as far as failures with ITSM, DevOps, or Agile?
Well, a lot of times people feel that just DevOps, and I think we even had an argument about this a few years ago, is that DevOps is a little bit more than tooling, right? Because a lot of people talk about DevOps, and immediately we go to the tools. We start talking about all the tools for DevOps, but... And, you know, Agile, it's also, you know, my team, when we moved to Agile, it was a huge cultural shift, right? And I think that's the thing is it's a lot of times when we think, it's like, these are smart IT people, they should figure out, but we're moving their cheese, right? This is cultural, right? And we have to address that, right? So as you're saying, it's like, what is cultural? Like, what is culture, right? How do you change that, right? And it's people's attitudes and how they behave. So one of the things that I learned from going to a lot of these DevOps things and stuff like that is to embrace failure, right? And that's a hard thing for IT organizations to do, is to embrace failure, because we're always trying to avoid, as John called earlier, those big smoking craters, right? So, you know, if we go to smaller continuous deployment and continuous integration, very, very small releases, they're grass fires, right? They're just grass fires. We can stomp them out here and there. But if we were on service packs, right, and I've been beaten up a few times about service packs. They're very cumbersome. They take a long time, and yeah, if depending on, you know, how the app or whatever you're building from is the service pack could break it, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think there's an organizational aspect, as we talked about earlier, approaching IT service management or modern service management. DevOps or Agile, which really modern service management is encompassing all of those, is an organizational change. I think where Agile may have run into problems is where a software team started, one software team was Agile, the others were still focused on waterfall or other legacy approaches to software deployment. Operations was having to figure out and jockey between these two different modes, and they weren't even being communicated to. And I think that's one of the most important things of success factors with doing any of this stuff, as Kathleen has mentioned numerous times. Start with the people, start with the relationships, start with the flow of information that has to, you know, cascade from inception of a service, development, build, test, deployment, and whether that's developed or purchased. And that all teams are on the same page. It's one of the things that's really been burned into a lot of our services that we're doing with customers to enable them to embrace the cloud or embrace even on-premise technologies. Is none of this is necessarily just for cloud-type workloads. It's for Windows, the new model for Windows 10 and the current branching model.
And you talk about CRM. I know you've been doing some projects around CRM where this applies. It's just, you know, our focus first was cloud because that's was our big bet. From a services perspective, it's really our big bet. But it's really about, you know, how you approach change, mm-hmm. right? And how you do these. And how do we reward people is completely... we were chatting at lunch, right? The culture of rewarding, you know, cowboys, mm-hmm. right? We
incentivize the firefighters, but we also incentivize the arsonists.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I think that's the, you know, realizing is that you may take multiple steps to getting to this journey. Like when we went to Agile, we called our first step was Wagile, Waterfall Agile, because we had to go from a very heavy waterfall approach to doing things much smaller. So our mid-Agile stream was Wagile, mm-hmm. right? So we kind of picked up some Agile aspects and applied it to our day-to-day work, because it was very difficult because we were working with other areas that had longer lead times. For what we were doing, right? They're like, well, our SLA is a month. And it's like, well, I got to get this done in a month, right? So if you're going to take 3 weeks to get this work delivered to me, I'm not going to be able to ship at the end of the month.
So a Microsoft 12-step program for modern service management. So one of the principles at Microsoft, from a Microsoft employee's perspective, is we're self-critical. And we're able to identify improvement areas for Microsoft technologies, services, and if I had to identify one thing that is from a service management perspective, modern or traditional, is Microsoft's really good at vision. We're able to come up with the most fantastic technology, some of the stuff that's out today, the bot framework, of course, Azure Office 365, automation. It just incredible, incredible visionary stuff. What we challenge with sometimes is helping customers get from where they're at, because every organization is going to be in a different place. And helping customers make that journey. Well, you have to know where I'm starting from, what my goals are, and how do I get there? So, you know, one, do I align with modern service management? Do I believe what you believe from a service management perspective? And how am I going to extract and drive enough value from Azure, from Office 365, from Dynamics, from moving to Windows or Pro Plus? How am I going to extract the value if I keep practicing old approaches and patterns that may not have necessarily been that efficient? So what we did is we basically crowdsourced again throughout the community this idea of, well, what if we put this into a 12-step program? And it wasn't necessarily a technology. Of course, that was one of the things we discussed earlier about one of the reasons that organizations fail is because they move into I want to do DevOps and what are my DevOps tools? But it's more about people than it is about the tools. We came up with this 12-step program, which, using a 12-step model, you start with step one, recognizing you have a problem. And Kathleen, that seems odd to start with that, because isn't moving to the cloud an opportunity?
Well, I think the first thing is when people make the decision to move to cloud, it's like either they determine, we've had customers just like, I'm just going to get out of the data center business, right? I can no longer get out of the data center business. I'm, you know, about to sign a huge custom support agreement. I got to upgrade. You know, either you got your house is on fire, you're burning cash, or something's burning. But I think, you know, that decision's made at a very high level in the organization, right? And I don't think we actually sit down and starting with the why. Why cloud, right? And going back to the infrastructure folks, right? Because the infrastructure folks are most impacted by cloud, right? It will threaten their livelihood. So understanding is like, why are we doing this? And communicating within the organization what the need is to move to, you know, Azure or Office 365. We're getting out of the business. We're not going to have server farms anymore for SharePoint. We're not going to house gateway servers in Exchange. We're going to rent this stuff because we prefer to consume it as a utility as opposed to, you know, generating it ourselves.
And that gives us a variable cost model versus a fixed cost model.
Right? Well, exactly. You only pay for what you use.
So, again, and these aren't necessarily, we cascaded these, as you can see here, not necessarily representing, you know, perfect sequence. As again, some organizations will be able to skip steps. Some may need additional steps, but these were some of the key things. What I'm going to focus on next is under engaging the business, IT, dev, infrastructure, and ops together. And notice together is underlined. The idea here is, the very second step should be establishing an adoption and change management cadence. At Microsoft, we've actually created an organization called Adoption and Change Management. I've actually gone through and been certified in their methodology, which is based on ProSci. And the idea is to adopt the cloud, whether that's users using Office 365, developers using Azure, operations using Azure. There's changes that have to take place, and we can't just leave that to happenstance. It is something that has to be, something that's formally done. Now, some organizations have their own adoption and change management, and if they can take care of that, great. But our belief is you have to formally address adoption and change management, otherwise that change is not going to take place. Also, I think Kathleen alluded to this before, identifying those initial services and apps for the cloud. Oftentimes, larger enterprises, they'll take the approach of what we call lift and shift. I'm going to take all of my virtual machines, and whether that's hosted in an ISV or a managed service provider, and I'm just going to move those into Azure. IaaS is a bit more expensive than other cloud options, obviously very viable, and as I said, a lot of organizations do that. But I think it's good to start experimenting, especially around an application or a service that may have other dependencies with other parts of infrastructure, that allows the organization to trial, to fail, as Kathleen mentioned before, and help them with what's that first step so I don't make any blocking decisions when I move into the cloud. Using modern dev, ops, and IT service management tools. And what this means, and obviously we can talk at length at what tools those are for Microsoft, but that's not our purpose here today. is modern DevOps and ITSM tools. If you look at the State of DevOps report that was published, it's actually been published every year, 80% of DevOps failures are the result of tools not being upgraded to support what we call the release pipeline. And what this is basically saying is, all the tools are aware and have their are aware and integrated in a fashion that when a release goes to production, goes through testing, goes through development, all of the tools are aware, all of the users are aware. There's that collaboration capability amongst all these platforms. Granted, the service management solution isn't probably not something the developer is going to use, and vice versa. The developer is not going to necessarily use a service management or an operations tool. But what we want to be able to do is integrate those end-to-end that allows me to understand what is my accelerated release pattern, or my additional load because I'm going to be releasing smaller releases more often. And there's that awareness. And the more automation, obviously, the better, because now I don't have to notify other people. The mm-hmm. systems can do that themselves.
And the next part would be is like step number five is plan and enable automated service provisioning. I think one of the challenges is that when you sometimes do those lift and shifts over into Azure, right? You just picked it up, moved it. It's like, how do I manage it and automate and do service provisioning? So you still have that manual effort to get compute into Azure and or any other cloud provider, and the business is not seeing the value, right? They were thinking, well, you can provision in minutes versus weeks. But if you don't enable automated service provisioning, you'll be failing the organization. So you know, spend the time to do provisioning. The other recommendation too is ruthless standardization leads to better opportunities for automation. That was one of my tweets from I think 2011 or something from Microsoft Management Summit. But one of the challenges is that we'll always take more than we need. Like you go to the buffet, you know you heap your plate up a little bit more. You don't need to eat all that food, but it's available and it's free and we can take more. And you want to be able to just give enough compute. So we go with the t-shirt sizes and that will enable you to have more predictable deployment patterns, cost management. So you have a small t-shirt, you have a medium t-shirt, and you have a large t-shirt. Now, if you want XL or double XL, that will require maybe some specific approvals because you're going to go with a G series in Azure, which is considerably a lot more mm-hmm. than other ones. But if you're using it for a lot of workloads, people do Azure Dev Test, right? So you just offer them those three sizes and that's what they use with. If you need something over and above that, that would be on a per exception basis.
So one of the things, and I'll just add to this, I'm seeing right now a lot of customers that are struggling with cloud adoption, and this isn't just in Azure, this is in Amazon and other cloud providers as well, where they're taking this model of how they manage data centers in the past and applying that to the cloud. And I'll have to admit, I'm guilty. When cloud first started to bubble up as a strategy for Microsoft, I perceived it as just an extension of your own data center, and that's how it's going to be used. I couldn't be more wrong. And I think taking that as another means of failure by saying, I'm going to provision VMs, but I'm not going to use the automated identity security monitoring tools that are inherent or in many cases cloud-born. They were mm-hmm. actually built for cloud IaaS workloads. I'm going to take my existing security software, my existing identity software, and inject this into the VMs, because what that does is it ends up, A, slowing them down, because provisioning them, I have to make sure that software is included in the VM and working properly. Oftentimes, as you mentioned, automation, they're not automated. And so if I have to provision a VM, but now I have to have a human being go install software in that VM, and I have to give them an identity so they can access it, I'm starting to add a negative multiplier effect, because now I've got to do that every time I provision a VM. And some of the goals and objectives we're trying to achieve with modern service management won't be achieved because we're taking that legacy mindset and applying it, in some cases erroneously, because some of the things are built into the cloud. You don't need to add some layered utilities and capabilities and technologies into a cloud-based virtual machine.
Yeah. Well, it's because we did it that way before, and we've always done it that way, and it's very hard to change, right? It, you know, these are behavior patterns. You know, the other things that we, well, we need to involve development and deployment patterns. One of the things, you know, when I'm talking to customers about cloud or even my peers, it's like patch management is, you know, when we start looking at things, it tends to go away in cloud. Like, one of the things we look at is that, you know, if you're deploying a new release or a new update into Azure, is you're actually spinning up infrastructure as a code and the new version of the software all together. And then, as you said, as you start to migrate people over, and as you migrate the continuous, all the people over, then you will destroy the last version of it, right? So it's, you're not patching that instance. You're building up another instance, and you're moving it over. That's a different deployment pattern, right? And it takes, you know, well, if my job was to patch servers, I'm going to be a bit disappointed because I don't have any work anymore. But the idea is that, you know, deployment patterns change when you're moving into Azure, right? And we need to educate people on how that works.
So you're always wanting me to share my analogy, because what you're talking about is treating infrastructure as cattle, not pets. In other words, I think the model that I was describing and you were describing as well is if you're giving your servers cute names and you have to go in and hug the server for its warmth, you don't understand the purpose of cloud, which is to really commoditize compute to its lowest price point. You business folks are going to understand that. They're going to understand that completely. You know, it is a commodity resource. What it's called, where it's located, is becoming less and less important because all of that's automated in. And if I can just throw away infrastructure, which I couldn't do when it was all physical, you can't throw that away. But that's the paradigm that's challenging a lot of organizations, is they're still treating a server as something that I have to hold dear, I have to control it, I have to manage it a certain way, and you can let go of some of those patterns in the cloud that allow you to move very, very quickly. Whether we're talking PaaS, whether we're talking infrastructure and containers, all of those things change.
Step number 7, again, we need to identify, select your monitoring and automation hooks into applications, right? So nothing goes into the cloud without being fully monitored, right? So, you know, things like using App Insights and OMS right now that we use in Azure, that we have it. The other issue, too, is that who receives the alerts? Okay, so that changes in an agile DevOps world. The person who's responsible for OMS is not going to receive the alerts. He's knowledgeable on how to do monitoring, not what to monitor, right? And this is not a cloud. We have the same problem on-premise. So the idea is that, you know, if the service fails, it will go to the developers of the application to fix it right away, right? Instead of, you know, doing it. And also defining, we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, what can I automate and restart? So if a service stops, you know, reacting or being there, can I just restart the service automatically, right? So the service, you know, it was the time to detect failures, right? Time to identify and time to detect. And that's really important in cloud services.
Yeah, one of our colleagues, Carol Moon, he's actually blogged about this on the Axelos site, about splitting monitoring up between a monitoring service and then the monitoring teams that are basically, they define the rules and they define the targets and they define the routing of if something breaks and automation can't fix it, they're the folks that get to it. So finally, addressing people, process, and technology and solving the problem, very important, identifying and training. Identifying, training, and preparing people for different roles. A lot of organizations have been through ERP implementations, and I mean, obviously this isn't as massive as deploying an ERP within an organization, but there is going to be some retraining. There's going to be the training with understanding how to manage a software as a service like Office 365, which is going to be simpler because it is a service and the dashboard's very simple and it's not as intricate as, say, something like Azure, which is going to require a little bit more training, just so people understand the capabilities, like myself, who I assume that it was just a bunch of VMs that I could create, access, and manipulate, but Azure offers so much more than that. Identifying current process models and gaps. What was very interesting is when we first came up with this 12-step model, or still 12-step approach, a lot of our colleagues said, why aren't you doing process work up front? Why aren't you doing that in step one, two, or three? And my response was always the same. If you don't understand the capabilities, when I introduce a process change, you're going to push back and go, well, what about this? What about this control? And it's because you may not understand, the cloud takes care of that. Automation takes care of that. Or a different approach. You know, some capability addresses the need that was formerly addressed by process and approach. So that's why we put this out here. And normally when I explained it like that, it was, okay, yeah, that makes sense. People have to understand the capabilities. That's why training is, you know, precedes it.
Provide and just enough process, right?
And just enough.
So the other thing is that you're not spending a lot of time defining it. It's just enough process to get going, right? And you don't start renovations on your house before you move into it, right?
Correct.
And so the idea is you're renovating as you're living in your house.
So step 10 is providing role transition support. And again, I always go back to my experience in ERP implementations, where you have to support, whether that's through temp, whether that's through workload deferral or transitioning or bringing in temps, to allow the people that are going to be managing the cloud, that are going to be managing these services and more of this modern service management approach, they need that role transition support. People are naturally going to fall back to what they know, and if they know traditional ITSM, traditional operations, traditional development, they're just going to continue that practice. You have to really remove them from that and support them so that the traditional work is minimized, reduced, goes away, and they focus more on the more modern approaches here.
And they're using new tools as well, right? So they're using new tools, they're using more agile approaches and everything else like that. So you just let them focus in the mode two operations versus going back to mode one.
So number 11 is implement changes to processes. So we had identified earlier, what are those process mods? Now hopefully, I'm saying hopefully from an audience perspective, when we're doing this with our customers, we're not going bigger, we're going smaller. We're wanting to reduce the amount of manual effort, manual work, the number of administrative stops, any kind of waste that's in the process. So it's essentially a leaning effort to say, I need to lean the process down because of these capabilities that the cloud provides. If you come up with processes that are bigger, more manual, you're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
That's not really what you're going for with the cloud.
Well, identification of standard changes is really important when you go to the cloud, right? When you're going to the cloud, because if you're using infrastructure as a service in Azure, you're not going to put everything through your change advisory board. So, you know, where do I put things in as service requests versus changes that need to go through change advisory board approval, right? So the idea is that it's still a change, but the approval is more automated or it's more seamless because, you know, they can actually request compute in Azure.
And a lot of times those changes, for example, Kathleen shared the intersection analogy that we've used quite often and quite successfully. Change management is not the only one that's impacted by modern service management, DevOps, and Agile. But it's also changes that are coming from Azure, from Office 365. You may not have a vote. It's something that's just communicated. So change management becomes more of a, I get a notice, I know that a change is going to happen on a future date, and here's the process we follow, versus the administrative approval, no, we can't move forward, just keep deferring. You know, we have our own policies here at Microsoft of staying as current or evergreen as possible, and we can't continue to just take on what's called technical debt by not moving forward. So that's why these changes are pushed. So a lot of times, those new change management or software update management processes are impacted by the technology and how we've driven things to be simpler, and sometimes organizations make it more complex than it needs to be.
Exactly.
And then finally, the 12th step, of course, is transitioning to operate as a service. So this is when the IT organization essentially becomes the service provider that we are suggesting and recommending they become, which is, you know, they are able to identify services, monitor them end-to-end, manage them end-to-end, and provide value and demonstrate value of that service end-to-end. And that's the 12-step program.
And in closing, thank you very much for joining us today to learn more about modern service management. We enjoy presenting the content to you. We're very passionate about modern service management. And thanks to all our colleagues again in Microsoft that helped create that content so we could present it to you today. John, can you wrap that up for me, please?
Certainly. We hope this has been beneficial, that modern service management, and we've described for you what it's about. It's not a new product or a licensed thing. It's simply a lens and a perspective, and we hope you found this time valuable and helpful. If you want some more information, here are some abbreviated URLs for both Microsoft Professional Services as well as the LinkedIn group, where we are having discussions around modern service management with many people in the industry, not necessarily folks from Microsoft as well. If you want the white paper, you can email us at microsoftitsm@microsoft.com with MSM Azure white paper in the subject line. And also be sure to follow us on Twitter at microsoftitsm. Thank you for the time and have a great day.
Thank you.